Hi everyone, this is Austin welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, January the 21st, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I are devoted seekers of the Law of One, and we manage the LL office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody with us?
We're here.
Yes, indeed.
And you're good, Gary? We may have lost Gary.
Uh-oh.
We'll see if we can get that worked out. Hopefully he can hear us. I'll go ahead and get started. We're going to do things a little bit different today, and before I jump into the opening riff, we're going to talk about some upcoming events that we have going on at LL Research. The first event is the Art of Healing Circle Retreat coming up in March from Friday the 21st to Sunday the 23rd. Here in Louisville at the Courtyard Louisville East Hotel. This workshop is developed and facilitated by our good friend Beatriz Gonzalez, who has been an intuitive healer for the past 30 years. In her journey as a healer, she has come to realize the mental and emotional roots of physical ailments, and in searching for ways to adapt her healing to this realization, she found the Law of One. She's integrated Ra's teachings about the nature of healing and catalyst into her workshop, and we are honored to host her for the weekend and share in this transformative experience. The second event will be an archetypes workshop held April 11th to the 13th in Perryville, Kentucky. This workshop will be an exploration of the tarot-based archetypes as discussed by Ra in Book 4 and the Law of One. Led by LL volunteer and good friend Safira Vox, this workshop will attempt to make clear a concept that is otherwise complex and confusing. A career philosopher and mystic, Safira has spent the past years studying the archetypes with the intent to someday share a clearer and fuller understanding of this system than was covered in the raw material. If you're interested in attending either of these workshops, you can find more information on the Bring Forth homepage. That's bring4th.org. Bring Forth news section. Does anybody have anything to add about these events?
Justin, I think that they're both going to be absolutely outstanding. And I encourage anyone that is eager to balance and work on healing the self to come to Beatriz's workshop.
I'm pretty excited about both of these. I got a chance to attend one of Beatriz's workshops in Texas, and I was impressed with the actual exercise that she has, the presentation she has, and just the transformative experience that everybody there experienced. It was a pretty amazing thing, and she adapted the Law of One to fit her healing practices. It's pretty neat. Gary, are you back with us?
Uh-oh.
He's was supposed to be, but it looks like he's not, so we will have to keep trying for Gary. I'll go ahead and jump into the opening riff then. This is from a Kuo session on March 13th, 2010. Focus intensely and persistently upon the Creator, seeking the Creator's face, hungering and thirsting for the Creator, and encouraging yourself to become more and more sharp-set with that hunger, more and more dry with that thirst for devotion, for prayer, for praise, for thanksgiving, for practicing the presence of the one Creator. And when you do that and you come to a choice point, you can cry out, "Lead me, Lord, lead me in your righteousness. Make thy way known before my face. For it is thou, Lord only, that makest me dwell in righteousness." This is a way of devotion. And when you pray, "Lead me, Lord," you shall be led. For the Spirit is quick to answer the call, and angels flock to one who seeks not the kingdom of this world, but the will of the Father.
Thank you, Austin. Quite a while ago, probably 40 years ago, my mother was struggling with her faith. And she knew that I had been devoted to Jesus since she knew me, since before I could talk. I knew Jesus. She wanted to know Jesus, too. She wanted to know the Spirit. She wanted to know the Creator. And she came to me in some distress because she'd been trying and trying and trying, praying and praying and praying and not feeling anybody talking back. Problem was that when you make the shift from us here below in this realm to the realm of the Father, to use Christian terminology, you leave faces behind, and you no longer have something that you can get hold of to talk to. And not everyone's imagination is up to this challenge. Well, I knew that she slept in a four-poster bed, so I told her, I said, that post at the bottom of your bed on the right, I said, I want you to stop praying to the Creator. I want you to start praying to the bedpost. She looked at me as if I was crazy. I said, "Talk to the bedpost." Later, she came to me, and I never saw such a transformed and joyful face. And she said, Carla, you're not going to believe this, but the bedpost hears me and talks back. And I said, "Okay. You know it's not the bedpost, right?" And she said, "Yeah. But I said, "It's okay. Just talk to the bedpost. It does not matter who you designate. Just keep going deeper, and one day it won't matter." There's another way you can look at this matter of devotion. I have a husband to which I have been married since 1987, and our relationship goes back to 1980. It has never been abrogated in any way. I have always kept the faith with him, and he has always kept the faith with me. His word is good, and so is mine. And we know we can trust each other. There have been times in my life, and one happened here recently, when it would seem not the logical thing to do to stay completely and absolutely faithful to that relationship. In this particular case, my husband felt that unless certain situations were altered for the better to make me more comfortable, I should not work with a friend. However, the friend was offering me the chance to be of service in the public. There wasn't a thought in my mind except to be faithful to a relationship that goes beyond space and time, beyond any imaginable future or past. I believe that we have become one, my husband and I, and that to have taken another's side, even though it would seem in the short run that by doing so I would have been more of service, would be to move from the eternal now, which my husband and I live in most of the time, back to the old consensus reality of, can I trust? And it was far more important to me that Jim knew that he could trust me and that what he truly felt was right for me was something that I was going to do. Oh, you're just being pushed around, my friend said. You mean to tell me you let somebody push you around? Yes, I said, that's exactly what I mean, if you want to put it that way. Well, I'm happy to say it worked out, and these things always do. Thing by that choice I made, not in the consensus reality. But more importantly, my devotion remains pure. I know it's only a devotion to a person, but is not everyone the creator? When I am devoted to my husband, am I not devoted to the creator? Only reason I don't do it is that it would be so shocking to my friends and family that I don't want to put them through it. But in the Hindu world, a red mark at the center of the forehead indicates one of two things. If a man is wearing it, it indicates faith, devotion to woman is wearing it, it tends to indicate devotion to her husband. Like most traditional religions, there is always that belief that somehow women can't sustain as high a belief system as a man. But again, a woman is able to express her devotion to her husband who is standing in for the Creator. What is it to be devoted, unseen entity? It is excruciatingly difficult for most people. It is difficult to feel in the first place. And certainly I believe it is very difficult to sustain. Daily and intensive work. It takes not just praying directly to the Creator. It takes praying to the Spirit, whatever you want to call that entity that links you to the now. Some call it the higher self. Some call it the guidance system. whatever you call it. There is that relationship standing there waiting to help. It's been given to you strictly in order that you may use it to go deeper, ever deeper, and then deeper still, deeper and deeper into the now. We have basically two choices when we come to a choice point. And the choice is, do we follow the kingdom of the spirit, or do we follow the kingdom of the world? No matter how you analyze it, it comes down to that. Another way to put that is, it becomes a choice between devotion to love and devotion to fear. But that opens a whole bag of worms, and I don't have time to talk about that. Nevertheless, it's something for you to think about. I encourage you to pray every day. Lead me, Lord. Lead me in thy righteousness. Make thy way plain before my face. For it is thou, Lord, thou, Lord only, that makest me dwell in And again, so do thou, my Lord, thou and I never apart. So do thou, my Lord, thou and I never apart. Wave up the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave up the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am a bubble, make me the sea. I am a bubble, make me the sea. Amen.
Thank you so much for that, Carla. That was beautiful. Apparently Gary can hear us, but he's having difficulty talking. Are you able to speak now, Gary?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, yes.
We have Gary. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Oh, thank you. It's the Bluetooth.
So glad.
It's that device I was using. Same thing happened when we did the board meeting. The group couldn't hear me, so I had to shut it off, and that's exactly what I did this time. So I will be with you all. Yeah.
We're not interesting enough for new technology.
We're thrilled to have you with us.
Oh, thanks. It's good to be with you all.
All right. Let's get to questions. Our first question comes from Todd F. from the Law of One Raw Material Study Group on Facebook. Todd asks, what is the atmosphere like now versus when you all started? And Todd is referring to the basic spiritual atmosphere when Jim and Carla basically started seeking, when the raw material started, sort of that.
Well, I think it's fairly obvious that the spiritual seeking quotient, if you could quantify it, is higher now. There are more people that are consciously trying to find what their spiritual path is, and there's more people that have left what we would call organized religion and struck out on their own trying to find their own path, realizing that it was and is an internal journey that we're all taking. 2 months ago on CNN was a very interesting program on near-death experiences, which I was surprised to see, but they treated it with a great deal of respect. And it was called To Heaven and Back, and one of the three people whose near-death experiences they were talking about had written that book, and then CNN just used it as their title, too. So I've seen other places where people are talking about spiritual matters in a public forum that didn't used to happen, things that are much more personal and individualistic rather than being a part of organized religion. So in general, Carla, I would say things have progressed along rather nicely. How about you?
Well, I think in that way they certainly have exploded, absolutely, not just doubled or tripled, but just absolutely exploded all over the globe. I would make a distinction, however, that saddens me to a certain point, and that is that when you and I were kids, Mick, it was the 60s, and in the late 60s especially, we who were in college and we who were young at that time knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that we could make a difference in our society. And we laid into that task with everything we had. It wasn't simply a flower child experience, la-di-da. We changed policy. We made differences in society. There was a hope, a sense of moving forward and of ourselves as a group. We young people will change things. And to an extent, we actually did, permanently and forever. Moving to the present time, we have far more of a universal desire to get out of the box, to seek the Creator for ourselves, to learn the truth, and so forth. But it seems to me that, to a certain extent, there has been the loss of unity amongst all of the people who are stepping out of the box. And it has stubbornly remained for many a journey taken by one or taken by a few. I am not sure whether it is that old bugaboo, I'm right and you're wrong, that has caused Presbyterians to differentiate themselves from Episcopalians, who differentiate themselves from Baptists, who differentiate themselves from Roman Catholics, that kind of thing, or whether it's simply a basic fear that if you get involved with too many people, there's going to be someone that's going to tell you what to do and you may not want to do it. Whatever the reason for it, I'd say there is less group energy now for change, less belief that we can make a difference in the real world, real meaning consensus, reality world, meaning politics, and economics, and so forth. Now, this may be a good thing. This may be simply because third density is used up, and there's no longer any reason to change consensus reality. The only thing that needs to change is our own mind, our own heart. And if we change the way we are, if we enable ourselves to open our hearts as much of the time as possible and keep that heart open, keep that space for lightening the consciousness of planet Earth open so that the energy flows through us personally, one person. Then we're doing our job. This could be nothing more than an absolutely correct and appropriate. I don't know, but that's my observation. Gary, what do you think?
I read the question as the questioner intending to know what the atmosphere was like within LL Research versus then versus now. But Todd F. didn't quite qualify his question.
Forgot to include his qualification. I followed up with him and asked him what he meant, and he basically clarified what I said. But it would be interesting to hear what you have to say about that, too.
Oh, sorry. He did mean, like, the general societal temperature reading?
Yeah, it's sort of a spiritual atmosphere.
Oh. Okay, then...
Nevertheless, go ahead.
Because
that's interesting, too.
I'm in concurrence with Carla and Jim. And that's a really interesting insight, Carla, that you offer about there not being that group energy. And I don't know. I think I see it in pockets, but not in mass movements per se. I mean, you definitely see people agitating for change as groups, but they seem rather disconnected and not widespread. I mean, you saw the Occupy Wall Street movement, and you see people still fighting for workers' rights and voting rights and for the environment especially. I think that's probably, if there's any unifying cause happening right now, it's probably geared towards saving our biosphere and combating climate change and reversing and undoing all the harm that corporations and corrupted governments and us, you know, every ordinary, everyday ordinary people have caused to the planet. It's really, really difficult, though, for me to get a sense of where things are spiritually because it depends so much on where you look. And mainstream media will give you one particular point of view, and American mainstream media will give you a particularly violent point of view.
Mm.
But if you read alternative literature, you see signs of progress, you might say, being made in spiritual terms. But like I think it was Carla who said that there is, and you use the word explosion, and that's my sense of it too. And we may be biased because we at LL Research get a cross section of people who are spiritually seeking, so we see a lot more of that, but it seems that there's more and more people awakening, more people asking questions, and again, to refer back to Carla's response, seeking to get outside of the box, to find their own way, etc. So that's my basic, general, vague sense of things. There's both cause for hope and pessimism in that respect, but I'm going to bank on hope.
How about you, Austin?
I think that's right to an extent to say, especially in this area of the world, we aren't seeing a whole lot of action being taken for change. But if we look around on the other side of the world, I mean, in just the past few years, there were two revolutions in Egypt alone. Just people coming together, and actually Ukraine right now, in the capital of Ukraine, literally at this moment, there's a revolt going on. So there's change going on, but I think that it's a good point, especially on this side of the world, that it's like the thought is there, but the action, the will to take action is not there. That reminds me of when Ra was talking about the necessity of taking action. They say, consider for the self whether your thoughts can walk, basically meaning that for your thoughts to really mean anything in the literal world, you have to take action and allow your thoughts to move through your body and let your body do the work in this realm in the form of taking action. So I think that the social atmosphere in different parts of the world is different, and we're seeing change in a lot of different places. But there, I also get the sort of sense of stagnancy compared to what I guess would be the hippie movement, is what we would call it.
We would call it the hippie movement, and it was an interesting thing that they you know, linked the hippie movement, which suggests flower power and lots of drugs, sex, drugs, rock and roll, none of which is wrong. That is all accurate. But we don't link that with all of the commonality all around at least America and North America that created things like the changes in the war in Vietnam, its eventual closure, laws that Kennedy began to push, and that when Kennedy died, I'm blanking out on his name.
Lyndon Johnson.
Lyndon Johnson.
Voter Rights Act, Civil Rights Act.
As an act of devotion to JFK, I think, mustered together with his considerable ability, which he had spent a lifetime crafting to get for unity and rights for minorities and so forth. We have so much to be thankful for in the, quote, hippie, close quote, movement. Now, today, yes, there is so much more awareness that we need to move out of the box, and that we need to seek the Creator on our own, because we are not being satisfied with the religion that our great-grandfathers had. And I'm not saying that our fathers had it, because they didn't. I think the last faithful group was in World War II. And at the end of World War II, when the Korean War began and things came out about that, and more as time went on, it became quite obvious that the old paradigms were no longer working for the people. They were not able to find satisfaction and absolute integrity in their churches. And if you look at the churches, you can begin to see why. And, of course, that was happening then, but it was like you could smell it, but you couldn't prove it. Now you could prove it. But I think that there have been probably three generations where the parents have not been able to say to the children, this religion that I'm taking you to on Sundays and on Wednesdays for prayer meetings and so forth, this is absolutely truth. And I think you can depend on this, you can lean on this, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, there are some people, there are some few people who still have that paradigm. Very few compared to World War II and previous to that. So I think that's huge. That means that we're pretty well thrown out onto our own. And to give everybody credit, everybody is trying their very best to seek the... and I hope that the story I told about my mom and praying to the bedpost is helpful, because I think one huge aid in seeking for devotion and a belief system that works for you is making the switch from space-time with its wake up, go to work, come home, eat, cheer for the Dodgers, go to bed, wake up, go to work, eat, cheer for the Dodgers. You know, that reality and the reality of now, the reality that we need that has no box, the reality of infinity, eternity, the reality of the Creator. In making that leap, it really helps to have some intermediate, whether it's a guru or a teacher or a favorite book that you have or a spiritual experience that was transcendent for you and you alone. No matter what it was, something has to happen to link up the now and get up, go to work, cheer for the Dodgers, go to sleep. These are the same, these are one and the same thing, two sides of the same coin. But to become more and more proficient at living in both worlds at the same time, I think it helps to have some intermediate tools to use. And I hope that whatever those tools are, you all can make good use of them. And, I mean, don't trust us. I mean, we're just idiots like you all, you know, duh. But the truth is in there somewhere, just from life experience and from the massive amount of work in between the four of us that has just the four of us had done in seeking, and the build-up, and it gets intensified and intensified more and more a little bit every day. I want to know the Creator. I must know the Creator. I thirst for the Creator. And any, you know, feelings that you have of that, go with it. Go with it no matter what. Trust that, because your way of thinking, your discrimination, that's everything. Trust that. Don't trust another soul.
I have a interesting sort of snapshot to shed some light on the sort of demographics that are interested in the kind of alternative spirituality that we offer through LL Research, and how that might be indicative of a shift in the spiritual attitude. And that is that if we can take our Facebook likes as sort of a demographic for people who are interested in this material, which is a very rough thing, I wouldn't take it as a concrete example, but young men especially, our largest demographic are men 25 to 34, and even men 18 to 24 is a pretty large demographic we have on our Facebook page. The women demographic, it's an even spread pretty much across all age ranges. But for men, the younger men especially outnumber the older men a whole lot. So that seems to me like the younger kids nowadays are more interested in spirituality without the church. I think we've got a friend who is a professor of philosophy who said something similar. He's been teaching introduction philosophy to college students for 30 years now, and he said that he sees a distinct shift in the attitudes of his students towards the material that he's teaching just in the past few years. So I think there is the emergence of maybe the new breed that Ra was talking about going on, and they're getting a little more interested in outside-the-box spirituality or just spirituality in general.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting.
Did anybody else have anything to add to that?
No,
I have
good.
Noticed that men more than women have always been interested in L&L Research's material, because of the questioner. The questioner was a male. He was a scientist. He asked questions from a very deep and a very wide experience, but they were always scientific, and they were based on things that he had sought and proven to his own satisfaction in the past, so that he was always rolling towards something from a known, you know, okay, this is what I get now, and now I'm going to ask about this. And there is a definite scientific cast to it, even in, you know, looking at the material as basically physics. He was asked, Don, the questioner, was asking about how the world began and, you know, how creation began and so forth. And it was linked very heavily towards a system of physics, Dewey B. Larson's reciprocal system of physics. And so I think that in this, just this particular little tiny corner of spiritual seeking, it's always appealed more to men than to women. And I think that it's beginning to appeal more and more to women because women are more and more beginning to be scientists. When I was a librarian, there was not one feminine student in the Speed Scientific School that put out engineers. Now almost half of the graduating engineers at Speed Scientific School are women. So there's a huge difference there. And I think that's why more women than there used to be are interested in this little line of thought that is helpful for some people.
Mm-hmm.
If that's helpful at all, I don't know if it is or not.
All right, Todd, thank you for that question. That was a great question. Our next question comes from Sonmi Brooks. This is sort of a metaphysical question. Not sure how much we can touch on. Sonmi asks, when you are awake, can all telepathic beings communicate with you if you wish? Are all telepathic beings able to listen to your thoughts? Why do some awakened humans see them while others can only hear them? Anybody have any ideas about this sort of mystical line of thinking?
Well, my only thought about it is that it would be bad ethics for a person that was able to know someone else's thoughts to investigate them without the other person's specific permission. And consequently, the answer is absolutely no. When you're awake, can all telepathic beings communicate with you? If you wish, no. Are all telepathic beings able to listen to your thoughts? No. Why do some awakened humans see them while others can only hear them? I'm not sure what that question says. So it's not a question that speaks to me, and I'm sorry, but I've got to pass.
Any ideas from Jim or Gary?
Some people have certain talents that others don't. I mean, we see that in every aspect of human endeavor. So it wouldn't surprise me that some, what she calls awakened human beings, could see fourth density or above entities, and other people might be able to hear them, not see them. You know, that doesn't seem to be too unusual there. Gary, what's your thoughts?
To respond with something useful, like, I'd have to know more about what Sonmi intended by telepathic beings. To frame this in terms of human versus higher density beings, in the channeling that Carla and Jim have done over the years, the Confederation asserts that they can scan, is their word, our thoughts, and thus I presume that is a form of telepathy. They can see our thoughts at any time, likely. But it seems that the human capacities, at least at this point in our evolution, are a lot more limited. But in terms of telepathy, I think we're all generally telepathic, or that may be our more natural state. However, as Austin and I were talking the other day about the logos, this particular logos, this sun body, deciding to accentuate the veil by placing heavier emphasis by way of opposable thumbs on the creation of spoken language. I may be linking a couple things here. But designing a third density experience that would cause us to rely more heavily on spoken language and therefore weaken our innate telepathic ability. But I think we all exercise that to some extent in terms of getting a sense of other people's moods or the climate in a room or the particular energetic climate in a nation. Like, for instance, after 9/11, there was a certain political climate that you could kind of sense in the air, so to speak, about what thought forms, what perspectives were favored and what perspectives weren't favored. And I would close my response by offering a few times in my own life where I'm sure something has transpired, which I would call telepathy. One was that I was making an 11-hour drive, no longer than that, I think, from Ohio to Alabama. I had moved down there. I was with a female that I was kind of head over heels for a while, and it was our second time in person together in this incarnation. So we were in this small space inside of my Ford Escort, she in the passenger seat, me driving, and together for over 10 hours. And towards the end of the trip, I see clearly in my mind what she is thinking. I see her picturing someone playing a man, playing the guitar, and feeling a fondness towards this man. And I ask her, were you just thinking that? And she responded, yes, that she was. And I knew it wasn't my own thoughts. And there were two other instances in my life. One, I was all excited about the Disclosure Project. For those not familiar, this doctor named Stephen Greer led a project where he gathered lots of firsthand witnesses and people with experience in the UFO phenomenon together at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. This is in the early 2000s, and each one shared their testimony about their experience of the UFO phenomena. At the end of their testimony, they swore to speak this testimony in front of Congress, should they be called, the goal being to force Congress to begin an investigation and open up the files that the government has made classified about UFOs, and to instigate or precipitate a disclosure. Well, anyways, I bought the VHS of this National Press Club conference. I was really excited about it, and I shared it with some what you might call uninitiated friends, people not thinking along my lines, thinking that surely they would watch this. And the evidence was so clear and self-evident that they would see that there's more going on. And they kind of were pretty stunned by the end of it and didn't react favorably. And one of my friends responded and literally said something along the lines of, if this is happening, I don't want to know about it. And I could feel this intense wave of fear that wasn't my own. It was absolutely his. I didn't make it happen. I just could perceive it all of a sudden. And there was another instance where a particular individual that we know was just kind of desperately in need of love, and he was getting a hug from another female, and I could feel this psychic need for love from this person, and I knew that wasn't my perception. All of these cases were in the early 2000s, and since I haven't had anything as vivid or as sharp as those.
I think your response has got a lot of help to it, Gary. More so than mine. We are all telepathic. That's our natural state. we're all under a veil of forgetting. Breaking through that veil is the work of a lifetime, and most people don't do it, but our natural state is telepathy, and we all have experiences of telepathy. I mean, just when you know when the phone's going to ring and you know who it's going to be on the other end, we've all had that. That's probably the most common single telepathic experience. But mostly our telepathic experiences are feelings, energies. You walk into a room, you get the energy. You may not know where it's coming from or who's the leading energetic soul that's guiding everybody else and, you know, manipulating other people. But I think that that's our first step towards our true nature is being aware of feelings and energies.
I absolutely agree that we're all telepathic. I think to touch on the idea of why some people are more and some people aren't, some people might just be more aware of their own ability, and, you know, somebody could be receiving some sort of telepathic communication from what Sanmi might call a telepathic being and just not realize it, might not have any conceptualization that there is something else that could be speaking to them in the way of thought or telepathy, and so they mistake it either for themselves or they just don't even register it consciously. I also think that sometimes there is an aspect of pre-incarnative agreement or even past life experience that could play a role in whether some people are more sensitive or not. A lot of people that have so-called paranormal abilities have them because of a sensitivity they brought in from their past life. Or there could be some pre-incarnative agreements for beings to observe our thoughts. Like Sanmi was talking about, there was a man who told a story at this past homecoming that was just a fascinating story. And it was about when he was a young child, he had this sort of mystical experience where he communicated with basically a group of spirits, and they shared with him that he had agreed to experience this, and he had agreed to share his thoughts with the larger group so that they could all learn. And it was a fascinating story. So I think that there are instances of beings listening to thoughts or people being more sensitive, but it's all, I think, either based on agreement or some sort of past life experience.
A real quick addition. I think a couple other possibilities that may cause one to suddenly activate their telepathic ability include changes to the physiological makeup of the brain. If the brain is conceived of as a receiving mechanism, then when you do some rewiring, to speak in layman's terms,
like either
then,
or through LSD or something like that.
Yeah, LSD, drugs specifically, and some sort of trauma to the brain that causes it to suddenly become aware and allow some bleed through of information that would have previously been filtered by the brain.
Okay, I think we covered that question pretty well. We're almost out of time, so I might go ahead and mention our two workshops again. We've got an Art of Healing Circle Retreat coming up in March, 21st to the 23rd. It's going to be a great workshop intended to facilitate healing from our friend Beatrice Gonzalez. She developed a healing technique based on the Law of One. She integrated the Law of One into a technique she already had. So it's a great experience, especially if you find your spiritual background within the Law of One and you're seeking some healing. This is going to be a great workshop.
And she does a lot of one-on-one stuff from her past vast experience of intuitive healing. It's fascinating and very, very useful.
She is an extremely experienced and fine-tuned healer, I would say. The second workshop we've got going on is our Archetypes Workshop, April 11th through the 13th. It's in Perryville, Kentucky. one of our good friends of LL Research is offering her beautiful homestead to host this workshop. It's an amazing farmland, about 70 acres, and it will allow for the possibility of bonfires, which I think Gary's a little bit excited about.
You could say that.
He's fond of bonfires.
I am. That is going to be basically run by our good friend Safira Vox, who is a brilliant philosopher. He's very intelligible in archetypes, and he has been working very hard to try to bring archetypes into a more understandable format. And he's going to, for the first time ever, as a live presenter, guide a group into understanding the archetypes better. And we're all pretty excited about that one as well. That is April 11th through the 13th, and if you want any information on either of these workshops, you can visit our Bring Forth website. It's bring4th.org, and it is under the Bring Forth News section. You'll see headings for both the Art of Healing Circle Retreat and the Archetypes Workshop. And does anybody else have anything they'd like to add to the end of the show?
No, we just love you. We love every one of you so much. Big hug from all of us.
Absolutely. Thank everybody for listening. This is LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you'd enjoyed this show, or if you have enjoyed this show, rather, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thanks to those of you who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week, and we will be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we will talk to you then.